Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Clippers. I'm your host, Lucas Han. Today is Friday, January 6th, and NBA trade season started yesterday, so we're going to get into that a little bit. Clippers play tonight in Sacramento at 7:30. I'm not going to talk too much about that game. I don't want to get necessarily bogged down every episode in game preview, game recap. So we'll talk a little bit next week about the games that happened over the weekend, but I think it's going to be a little bit more of an exciting episode if we talk about the trades. So, you know, if you don't follow the NBA on Twitter all day long, you know, like if you have a real life, you know, unlike me, but maybe you have a real life. The Cavaliers traded for Kyle Korver today. So we don't know exactly what the deal was because they're still working out some details where Cleveland's trying to swap around some of their pick obligations. They're trying to find a place to dump Mike Dunleavy's contract. It's a little complicated. You know, I'd be able to explain it probably more clearly in writing than over a recording, but it doesn't really matter how it went down for our purposes. The point is the Hawks are in full fire sale mode. They're blowing up this team. It's been successful for them for the last few years, but not successful enough. They're looking to trade their other big-time player, you know, much bigger-time player than Korver, Paul Millsap. So we're going to get into a few different questions today. We're going to talk about, should the Clippers make a play for Paul Millsap? Should the Clippers have tried to get in on the Kyle Korver deal and make a trade before Cleveland could? And is there anyone else from the Hawks roster that the Clippers should be looking at? So we'll start with Paul Millsap because it's the easy one. You know, I don't get your hopes up. the only way for the Clippers really to get Paul Millsap that's feasible, it's not like some daydream, right? Like, oh, Jamal Crawford and Wesley Johnson for Paul Millsap. Like, we can play with the ESPN trade machine, but no one's allowed to say no in that. The only way for it to really happen that's feasible is a Blake Griffin trade. And there's a few reasons why that doesn't work, even though it's the most possible offer the Clippers could put together. The biggest one from Atlanta's side is that the main reason they're moving Millsap is because his contract is expiring and they don't want to lose him for nothing and they want to get assets and rebuild. Blake Griffin's contract is also expiring, and Atlanta would probably be even more likely to lose Blake for nothing in July than Millsap. So it's kind of making their situation even worse in a way. And from the Clippers' perspective, while Millsap is a stud, I love Paul Millsap's game, but he's not as good as Blake Griffin is, and he's an older player than Blake Griffin is. And the Clippers would have to be giving, in addition to giving an old Chris Paul a supermax this summer, they'd have to give old Paul Millsap a supermax this summer, which is not a fun game. It's not a game that you really want to play with two guys, especially at the same time. That would be kind of brutal. So because Griffin's younger and better than Paul Millsap, Atlanta would have to throw some other assets in the deal to make it fair value-wise. But their goal is to start a rebuild and move these guys for kind of picks, prospects, young players. So how does it work that they're going to have to give picks along with their best player to get a guy who's probably going to leave in July? So yeah, it's fun for hypotheticals. It's fun to think maybe how Paul Millsap fits in the Clippers offense, but yeah, I don't think it really makes sense for either team. I don't think there's a deal to be found there. Now, where we really get into the meat of things is with Kyle Korver. But I'm going to make the argument that it would have been a bad deal for the Clippers if they had jumped in on that Korver action. What the Cavs are doing is basically they're sending out Mike Dunleavy Jr.'s contract and a future first-round pick for Kyle Korver. So realistically, the Clippers could have done something similar with Wesley Johnson, whose contract matches salary-wise with Korver. They could have sent Wesley either to Atlanta or to a third team, sent the first-round pick to Atlanta, and gotten Korver back. And I like Korver. Korver's an amazing shooter. He's a good player. Everyone really seems to like him everywhere he goes in the league. But I think it's definitely true that that first-round pick was too high of a cost for a Clippers franchise that right now is just really low on draft assets. They don't have a first-round pick to trade until 2021, and that's even a little bit shaky because of the stipend rule and the protections that they have on the picks that they already owe to teams. You know, they owe the 2017 pick to Toronto via Milwaukee. The Clippers are going to make the playoffs this year, obviously, so that 2017 pick is going to convey, so they don't have to worry about rollovers then. But the 2019 pick, where the Clippers could realistically be a lottery team in 2019, depending on how free agency goes this summer with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. And if the Clippers are a lottery team in 2019, that pick, which is owed to Boston via Memphis, that pick would roll over for Boston into 2020. And that pushes the pick the Clippers are allowed to trade back even further to 2022 and, on and on. So the reason it matters is because the further down the road you get, the more uncertain the future that you're mortgaging is. Because the 2017 pick wasn't too risky at the time. The Clippers pretty much knew they were still going to be good in 2017. And they are. They'll probably be good in 2019 if they can keep these guys around. But even if you keep Chris and Blake around, you've got to have serious questions by the time you get to 2021 about just age, decline, retirement. Who knows where? That's so far away. Think about something completely outside of basketball. Think about something personal to your life and how it could change. What's going to be different for you 4 years from now, where you could be at a different job? Maybe your kid is grown up. Who knows? You could move or live in a different place. And that's almost kind of the franchise could have the same variance. Yeah, they could be in the same spot, right? Same job, same house. But everything could also fall apart into a million different possible realities. So I think it definitely makes sense for them to try to hold on to their picks, because you never know what the future is going to bring. And that's just a little bit on a tangent, but that's why I feel like as a Clippers fan, it's important to appreciate what this team is doing right now, because we've seen how bad it's been before. We don't know how bad it's going to get in the future. Now, for my listeners, I want you to know that SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to find tickets for the games that you want to see up close and in person this season. There's nothing like being in at the game for the biggest plays of the year, and with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the seats that you want for a great value. SeatGeek has the best deals in the house, wherever you want to sit, whether that's courtside, club seats, or the upper level. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats for this weekend or any game this season. With SeatGeek, you always get the best deal on every ticket, because SeatGeek price compares for you by searching multiple ticket sites. Prices can vary depending on where you shop, but SeatGeek will always find you the lowest available price. Plus, every ticket you buy on SeatGeek is backed by their 100% guarantee. Best of all is that my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the SeatGeek app, go to the Settings tab and click Add a Promo Code. Enter the promo code LOCLIPPERS, and SeatGeek's going to send you $20 after you made your first purchase. So download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LOCLIPPERS today. Now, getting back into that Kyle Korver conundrum for the Clippers. Aside from trading, you know, when you talk about trading away the first round pick, obviously it's a question of the future versus the now. And that's a sacrifice the Clippers have been willing to make in the past. They've been willing to sacrifice the future for the now because they feel like they're close and they are willing to give up a late first round pick in a few years to help maximize Chris Paul's window now. But I think as sobering as it is to discuss, you have to think about how marginal the upgrade is and how marginally it affects your chances. Do the Clippers have a realistic championship window this year when you consider how dominant the Warriors have been against them recently? If trading this first round pick gets you Kyle Korver and you play the Warriors in the second round in the 1-4 se in a 1-4 one seed 4 seed series, like, does Kyle Korver make that series go 6 games instead of 5? Is that really worth a 2021 first round pick? Even if Kyle Korver were to help you get up to the 3 seed and you beat San Antonio and then you lose to the Warriors in 6 games in the conference finals, is it? I know obviously we want to get to the conference finals and break through because the Clippers haven't done that, but is it really worth another future first round pick to help get this core to just lose later on in the playoffs? And the less kind of feasible that a Clippers championship is, the harder it is to justify giving up on the future to bolster a present that still seems like a long shot. Then you get in Kyle Korver himself. Now, like I said, Korver is a good player, and I would like him for this team. But he's a 35-year-old shooter. His game is declining. His contract is expiring. So do you want to trade a first-round pick for another guy who could leave in July or retire in July, is not a sure thing to be on the team for more than half a season, just like Jeff Green last year? And, you know, I said during the Jeff Green trade, and I was one of the defenders in the moment of the Jeff Green trade, and I said the biggest thing the Clippers are getting is bird rights on a guy who can be a rotation contributor at both forward spots. And then Jeff Green ended up leaving. So what I thought was the best thing they were getting back was not just one playoff run with Jeff Green, but the ability to sign him, hopefully not overpay him, but sign him for a few more years and have another solid forward on the roster. You know, they weren't able to maximize on that, whether it, you know, he was offered a lot of money by Orlando and they didn't think he was going to sign that early, but still. Do you really want to trade for another guy who could just leave? And would Kyle Korver actually play minutes on this Clippers team? Because it just appears to me by going through the list that the perimeter rotation is loaded with guys who Doc either cannot or will not bench for Kyle Korver. Chris Paul and Raymond Felton are both needed as point guards. I don't think, obviously, Chris Paul isn't going to get dropped out of the rotation, but Raymond Felton, I think that he's probably more valuable in the rotation than if you played Korver, but the cost of that is having to play Austin Rivers at point guard again. JJ Redick obviously is just there. JJ Redick and Korver are both shooters, but Redick's just a better younger shooter than Korver is. Korver can't replace Luke Mbamute because he doesn't provide the same defensive impact that the Clippers need from those minutes that Luke gives them. So the two guys you're left with are Jamal Crawford and Austin Rivers. And to complicate things, both of those guys just got 3-year, 8-figure contracts from the Clippers this summer, which makes them that much harder to bench because you just paid them so much. Now, Austin is the team's youngest player. He's been so good this year. I think he's better than Kyle Korver. I'd rather have him on my team than Kyle Korver. I'd rather have him in my rotation than Kyle Korver. Crawford's merit is a little more dubious, but where Korver gives you a better option in certain situations because of his efficiency, he's definitely a downgrade in the ability to create offense. And I know we give Jamal a hard time, and I give him a hard time too because of his efficiency shortcomings at times. But the Clippers always seem to have stretches in games and in seasons where they need to lean on his ability to create his own shot heavily. And you won't be able to lean on Kyle Korver in the same way. So the only two ways that I think you could really find Kyle Korver minutes on this team would be to either play really small with him as the power forward or trade one of the existing six perimeter players that I just listed. Because I don't think playing him at the four is a good idea. So basically the only option is to trade someone else so that now you have minutes for Kyle Korver. The problem is that even when I went down that rabbit hole, I wasn't able to find really a feasible solution. So first of all, I just think it would be a little too much chaos. I don't think the Clippers are going to be making multiple trades right now to shake up their rotation because they're not a place where you probably feel like you need to make those big moves. The problem, whatever problems the team has had aren't because Austin Rivers isn't playing well enough and you need to move him for this guy or, anything. I don't think any of that has really been the issue that you're going to upgrade around the fringes. I think the problem has been just overall stagnation with the core group, but I don't think you want to break them up midseason, and then injuries, which have set the team back. So I don't think making trades to tweak the second unit is necessary or something Doc's going to look into too heavily right now. But another thing to consider is that Jamal Crawford and Austin Rivers can't be traded until January 15th. This deal went down today, and I don't think Atlanta is going to pass on a 2019 first-round pick from Cleveland so that they can wait 10 days and maybe get a trade with the Clippers after the Clippers are able to find another trade for Austin or Jamal. I think Atlanta would take the sure thing today before they waited for that. That would kind of be putting the cart before the horse. And the Clippers don't have a lot of trade flexibility with those rotation guys, or those perimeter rotation guys at least, because Chris and JJ aren't going anywhere. Luke and Felton don't make enough to bring back any return in a trade, really. And so you're stuck with looking at Jamal and Austin again. And aside from the fact that their new contracts won't let them be traded until January 15th, if you're already not sure that it's worth benching one of those guys to give Kyle Korver minutes, do you really want to build a trade around sending one of them away so that you can clear up minutes to trade a first-round pick to bring Kyle Korver in? I'm not enthusiastic about that idea. And then even if you do trade Jamal or Austin, you're bringing someone back in that trade. And it's probably going to be a wing player, someone who plays somewhere along the 2-3-4, who's going to be getting those minutes over Kyle Korver anyway. Because, again, if you're sending out an eight-figure salary, you're bringing in an eight-figure salary, and you're probably going to prioritize that guy over the 35-year-old guy on the expiring contract. So you're not even going to make that second trade for Korver anyway. The last guy on the Hawks that there's been some mention of in Clipper circles, not like front office circles, but I'm talking like on the internet, people speculating about this, is Thabo Sefolosha. Now, the Hawks are selling off these veteran players for future assets. They're trying to rebuild. Thabo Sefolosha is one of those guys, but are you willing to give up a future asset for Thabo Sefolosha? Are you willing to give up a pick? Maybe a couple second-round picks? Is he really worth a first-round pick? I'm not sure, but will some contender trade a first-round pick for him? Maybe. But for me, you end up in pretty much the same minutes conundrum with Sefolosha that I just walked through with Kyle Korver, except he's probably not even as good as Kyle Korver is. He's a more capable defender, but even if you thought about putting him in the lineup for Luke and Bamute, he's still not as good on defense as Luke, and he's shooting 10% less from three on the same sample size. So where Luke is making 41% of his threes by taking about two a game and playing conservatively, Thabo's shooting 31% by taking about two a game and playing conservatively. The only space where Cephalosha gives you something Korver doesn't give you that matters is probably that he's a more practical small ball four for the way that Doc Rivers likes to play, where he's using Wesley Johnson a lot specifically, because his strengths are on the defensive end of the floor. He's got a little more toughness. He rebounds well for a wing. So it's feasible that he could be an upgrade over Wesley Johnson, who hasn't played well this year. Going into that a little more, Wesley's minutes aren't exactly a sure thing because he's competing with Brandon Bass for that 10th spot in the rotation. So Cephalosha would be coming in and competing for a rotation spot with Brandon Bass. And the way that you make that trade to get Cephalosha salary-wise is you give Wesley Johnson back to Atlanta. Now that means if we're buying into Cephalosha being better than Wesley, it means that Atlanta would be taking back the worst player on a 3-year deal and sending out the better player with an expiring contract. So why would they do that? Well, you sweeten the pot with, you know, future picks. And now you're back to, are you willing to trade a future pick for a guy who might be able to be the 10th man if he's able to beat out Brandon Bass? It's just not a super exciting trade opportunity for me. It doesn't make me enthusiastic. I think I'd rather stand pat. There's one other kind of hypothetical trade idea that I conceived that I'll mention, but I think it's kind of crappy for Atlanta. I think it's just as flawed as all the other ones. It's if you sent Jamal Crawford to Atlanta and you brought back Cephalosha and also brought in Tiago Splitter, who has an expiring contract, is a veteran that they're presumably looking to move along with these other guys. But it's a crappy deal for Atlanta. They're moving two expiring veterans, where their goal is probably to either move these guys for picks or just let them walk this summer and get cap space. They're moving these guys for Jamal, who's an older veteran with one more fully guaranteed season on his contract, so he's not going to give them cap relief until the summer of 2018. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense for Atlanta. Even if you throw in the first round pick, I still think they would say no. And from the Clippers' perspective, are you willing to trade a first round pick for two guys who can both leave next summer and who are maybe going to compete with Brandon Bass and Mo Spates for minutes? It just doesn't make sense to me. You know, it's not that I don't like Cephalosha or I don't like Splitter, but I'm not willing to give up that first-round pick for someone who I don't see as a clear-cut upgrade, as filling a hole that this roster needs. So, you know, God forbid, Jamal Crawford or Luke Mbamute or someone really has a bad injury in the next month and is going to be out for the season, I could see the Clippers making a move to fill that spot because they're desperate. Like, especially with Luke, because I feel like Wesley isn't really a feasible starting three. Allen Anderson, haven't seen enough from him to think that he can really fill that role this year. And I don't like the idea of going small full time. So yeah, maybe if Luke Mbamute goes down, you look into trading like Wesley Johnson and a second round pick for Cephalosha so Cephalosha can start at the small forward position. But as long as Luke is healthy, there's no reason to make that trade because you're just trading a pick for Cephalosha to sit on the bench. So I think I know it's exciting to talk about the team that's in the news right now. That's obviously the Hawks because they're blowing everything up. But I think the trades that are more practical for the Clippers are the ones that we've been talking about. If you want to trade that first round pick to try to get Rudy Gay, depending on how Sacramento looks, but it looks like they're fighting for a playoff spot, so they might not want to move him. Maybe you try to make a deal for PJ Tucker. Maybe you try to make a deal for a guy like Wilson Chandler, but he's going to be hard to get for the assets they have. I think the Clippers end up standing pat this year because I don't think there's the I, I'm I fail to see the right deal out there that is both realistic, because, you know, a trade like Jamal and a pick for Wilson Chandler isn't exactly realistic, and a trade that actually helps them enough to make Doc accept it. Because Doc, I don't think, is looking to trade unless he really gets a chance to make this team better. So the Clippers, just a little bit of a closing going into this Clippers-Kings matchup tonight. Chris Paul will hopefully be playing, because the Clippers' three-guard lineup has had a lot of success in the last two games, but I think that run might be sort of coming to an end, because, like we talked about in the episodes this week, the three-guard lineup has its advantages on offense, but its shortcoming is defensively at the small forward position. Now, against TJ Warren, the Clippers got away with it, although Warren had a good game. Against the Grizzlies, it was way easier because you're playing against, you know, Ennis III, Vince Carter. You're not getting killed at that position. Against the Grizzlies, Austin Rivers is going to have to be out there guarding Rudy Gay. And Rudy Gay, for, you know, even though a lot of people make jokes about his game, he's not super efficient. Rudy Gay can score a ton of points in a matchup like that, where he has a big size advantage. So that's a little scarier for me. If the Clippers can get Chris Paul back, now the need to have two guards in that starting lineup is lessened, and you can start Chris Paul and go a little bigger. You know, the Kings have been starting Kostas Koufos and DeMarcus Cousins together. So I'd start Mo Spates and DeAndre Jordan together. Let Jordan guard Cousins. Let Spates guard Koufos. Put Luke on Rudy Gay. And then you have Chris Paul running the offense. That's what I'd do. That's my two cents. But I'm interested to see how it goes. I'm interested to see if Chris can actually come back. If he does come back, how are the Clippers going to handle when the Kings go too big? They don't play a lot of too big, but they'll play it to start the game and probably to start the second half. And we saw Luke have trouble playing the four position when the Kings went too big last night against the, or two nights ago against the Grizzlies. But then even if Chris Paul is out, how do the Clippers manage playing that three guard lineup when Austin Rivers is going to have to be guarding Rudy Gay, and because you're playing three guards, Luke gets bumped to the four position, which means Luke is going to have to guard either DeMarcus Cousins or Kostas Koufos. And Luke's a great defender, but at a certain point, you're giving up, you know, 30 pounds and 4 inches to a guy. There's not a whole ton you can do. But yeah, so we'll be back next Monday with a new episode of Locked On Clippers. We're going to talk about tonight's game against the Kings. We'll talk a little bit about Sunday's game. And then there's not another game till Wednesday, so we'll be able to get into a little bit of trade rumors, a little bit of your guys' questions. I'm looking forward to the episodes next week. Thanks for tuning in, guys. This is Lucas Hand signing off for Locked On Clippers.